Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Pete Lowenstein. I'm coming to you from NPR headquarters in Washington, and this is a closed circuit, not for broadcast. I have the pleasure of being joined here in the studio today with a number of my colleagues from the distribution division, and we're here to help provide you some updated information and answer your questions and just basically talk to you a bit about the PRSS Forward project that we're now all involved in. This is a project I hope some of you have been following carefully, since it's ultimately going to involve pretty much everybody in the system over the next couple of years as we work to take care of a major refurbishment of all parts of the system between now and the summer of 2013. So here with me in the studio today is Dick Colas, who is the Director of Operations and Engineering in our Distribution Division. And and Dick is serving as our technical coordinator manager for the Press Forward project. So he's not only a font of information, but he also is the guy who needs to make sure this all gets done. Why is this man smiling?
Thanks a lot,
Pete. I knew you'd appreciate that. I also have here with me Anita Ginyard, who is our deputy director for our PMO, our Program Management Office in the Distribution Division. And Anita is intimately involved with Dick and in his team, and really all parts of the organization who are working now to make sure all of this three, or is it a four-dimensional chess game, comes together when it needs to in the summer of 2013. So we have a number of folks who I hear are joining us on our conference call. And just to let you know, for a minute or two here, we have the mics, the phones muted, so you're only going to hear us for a minute, but we will relinquish the horizontal and the vertical control back out to everybody shortly, and we do look forward to having not only an opportunity to share information with you, but also to hear your questions, concerns, comments as well.
All participants are muted.
All right. Please don't take it personally. We also would remind you that even if you are not so inclined to jump on today and give us the benefit of your questions and comments, that we would still like to hear from you at any time during the course of this project. And while we will be doing this sort of periodic interconnect where we have a chance to chat with you like this, we also would encourage you to send us your email to prssforward@npr.org and send us your email that have for questions or comments. And we also would encourage you to send an email to subscribe to our newsletter, which we will be sending out periodically to keep you up to date on things happening with this project over the course of the next couple of years. And you can do that with checking in to www.prss.org as well. So with that, let me, are we, Dick, ready for you to start filling in the blanks on exactly what is this PRSS Forward, and maybe get us started, and then we'll start opening up the phones.
Yeah. PRSS Forward is a collection of projects, if you will, that all culminate in 2013 when we move into the new building at 1111 North Capitol in Washington, D.C. We are underway with three of those projects currently, and I'll briefly tell you a little about each one. The first one is receiver and NOC upgrade. We have decided on a receiver, and that is manufactured by IDC. It's the current manufacturer that has supplied the first go-around on Content Depot. We have 25 receivers in-house that we've run through a number of tests, and we continue to test vigorously until July or August before we place an order for those things. But basically, the 25 receivers are outfitted with four audio outputs and one hard drive. The other unique thing about these receivers is that each has two RF front ends, which is significant because we broadcast our streams on one carrier and our files on another, and this receiver can look at both of those carriers' different transponders. So it's a unique approach to a broadcast box that we haven't seen before, and we have a lot of interesting ideas in the hopper here, looking for ways to improve service and provide flexibility in all kinds of data delivery. The other project is called the Ground System Upgrade. That's the Ground Equipment Upgrade Project, technically. That has begun. That started in January, and we're still very much in the planning stages. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank everyone who filled out a survey for us. It is greatly appreciated. We've got a lot of good information. We have a much better idea as to the scope, and we're trying to narrow down the cost of this project. We're on pretty tight constraints for this and the other projects, and not only time-wise, but dollar-wise as well. And we'll have a little more information on that a little later. And the other project that is underway is we are getting organized to move into our new building. So all of the technical units at NPR and PRSS are in coordinated meetings weekly, where we work with technical coordinators to try to figure out how we're going to share this space and what kind of synergies we can find to do that. Under the Ground Equipment Project, those of you who filled out surveys have provided us with a lot of information that allows us to start getting organized and start moving toward what we need to do. And some of what we need to do is quite simple. We need to evaluate your needs, and in each case, it'll be a case-by-case analysis of each station's needs, the health of your system, what may or may not need to be replaced, what may need to be repaired. And we need to hire the right people to make sure that that work gets done properly. That project is being managed by Kevin, who's with us today, if there are any questions on some of the details behind that. We will bring in engineers and provide surveys. And those of you who were in the first go-around know how this goes. A number of contractors, installers, and we need to be geared up to put these people in the field sometime later this calendar year, early next year. Some stations will need, as I said, some stations will need a complete replacement, where others may need little or nothing at all, and that's what we're trying to assess right now. The other project that we're lined up to begin about a year from now is to build the new NOC, and we need to do that in two stages. Quite possibly off-site, off-site somewhere in Mass Avenue's building or in an off-site building so that we can put together our next transmission system and be ready to move into the new building. It's very important that all of these projects wrap up in June of 2013. That's a very hard date for us, and so far everything is on time, and we hope to keep moving. We have a great staff of project managers who help us organize, and a very good technical team both on the engineering side and the software side. And the software engineers have been busy at work working on the integration of the equipment necessary to support these new receivers. Since they are capable of a number of features, they do need a little tailoring to be able to incorporate into our current network design. So that's a very high and quick overview of the projects we're working on. And I'd like to get to some of your questions or any further explanation you're looking for in any of this information we're providing you.
All participants are unmuted.
Okay, so I believe that we are ready to start hearing from those of you who are on the line out there. And so why don't we stop and see if we've been hearing a number of folks log in and jump in on the line. So let's not waste time and get to the questions. Are there any? Well, gee, Dick, you did a
great job. Yeah, here we go.
You did a great job. I think I maybe heard somebody queuing up.
Yeah, this is Daryl Scott from WCBU in Peoria, Illinois.
Hi, Daryl.
Hi. One of the first things that came to mind when we were talking about new gear from IDC was stations that have purchased the like an extra decoder for breaking news to dedicate 24/7. Are the are other additional receivers going to be available for purchase? Are the the existing ones able to be added to the new gear so we can still retain that that added functionality of having a dedicated receiver to breaking news?
Well, we don't have all your answers yet, but I can tell you this. The plan calls for us to begin rolling out this new receiver about a year from now. over the subsequent year, you'll be allowed to use the SR Pros as well as the new receivers. We'll in effect be running tandem systems to support both receivers, and we'll give stations plenty of notice as to when that receiver would be obsoleted, and that may be at least 2 years from now. And yes, you can buy additional receivers. And we're just coming to a price on that now. And as I said, each one, you have to think about this receiver a little differently than the SR Pros and the SFXs. Each single receiver has four audio outputs and one hard drive. So you can look at it as two SR Pros and one SFX per box. And each station gets two receivers.
There's one other point, too, Dick, that you might want to talk a little bit about on the new receiver, and that is, unlike the current batch of stream receivers, the new receivers that we'll be providing, the outputs on that are completely independent of each other. So in the past, while a station might have felt the need to have a dedicated receiver set up to pull down the breaking news channel or things like that, it's entirely possible that that would not be needed in the new system if I'm understanding correctly the way the new receivers work.
Yes, I think you can do that. The software is not completed for the receiver yet, so there are some open issues, but there is a possibility to do that as well.
Cool. Thank you very much.
You're
okay.
Welcome.
So, do we have anybody else who has a question or a comment they'd like to throw in at this point?
Hi, it's Victoria at Vermont Public Radio.
Hi, Victoria.
Hello. I had a question about subscriptions and how the tandem operation will work when we're subscribing to a SD5-1 for a program on the old system. How will that evolve in the new system without running to a SD5-1?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble getting your entire question, and I also hear the broadcast in the background on a delay, so if you could repeat that, please.
That we currently have for the old system and how the evolution to the new system will work.
Well, we are developing in distribution a completely independent control system for the new receivers that will run in parallel with the current control system for the current batch of IDC equipment. And for the first 6 months, we intend to roll out and work with stations and help them get their new receiver online and make sure their wiring is correct and check the functionality. And we will not guarantee service on those for at least 6 months when we feel that the entire network is caught up and ready to go. And over the second six-month period, we'll still run the old equipment in parallel with the new equipment. So you have basically a year from the beginning of the rollout to be able to utilize both receivers. And as I said, they are independent control systems that will not conflict with each other.
But in terms of subscribing to a program at a station, they would use the same subscription process they've always used, I take it, whether it's for subscribing it and assigning that subscription to an existing receiver or assigning it to a new receiver that would be in the new configuration. That would all happen through the same portal interface on the web.
Yeah, it will be clearly understood which one of those user screens is talking to which receiver.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, guys, this is Henry Cook here in Richmond, WCVE.
Hey, Henry.
How you doing?
Hi.
Hey, earlier question about receiving the 1-4 output receiver. Right now we're using 5 or 6 because I'm feeding an HD 2 channel. I don't know if we purchased the extra 2 receivers of the current mode, but how's that going to come into play?
Well, I'm sure you did purchase them. Every station was allotted 2 stream receivers at 2 ports apiece and 2 file receivers. So you must have had to purchase the extra ones. That was our standard operating procedure.
Okay. Yeah, I don't handle the billing. I just handle the equipment.
Okay.
The other question, I did email you guys about the original ENCODE Dropbox. Windows 2000 operating system. Are those going to be upgraded as well?
I think you have to talk to ENCO about that. They're responsible for that that part of the maintenance.
Yeah, didn't we receive that as part of the package from you? I don't remember us actually buying that. I mean, there are some stations in town, low-power FMs, that received one when they received the original equipment. I don't know if they bought them either. I guess my question is, who owns it? Do you guys own it, or do we own it?
Do you own it? It's your equipment.
Okay.
And presumably you have a maintenance agreement or a support agreement with ENCO that they would be the ones you would work with to get those kinds of upgrades made.
Oh yeah, we switched all our systems over to ENCO, so all our workstations are ENCO, and actually the 2000 is one of the best running systems we've got.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure. We had a suggestion that if you're not actually talking, that you actually mute your phone if that's possible, because we are getting some delay mixed in with the actual questioners, and we're actually hearing ourselves coming back. It's a little bit like satellite delay. I don't know if this is digital delay or satellite delay or all the above.
A little bit of everything.
A little bit of everything.
Could I then ask a question?
Sure.
This is Dustin Hapley at WSF in Tampa. To kind of follow up with the lady from Vermont Public Radio, are we going to have to resubscribe to every subscription to direct them to these new receivers?
I can't really answer that. That's a question for our information systems team, and I'm not too familiar with the wireframes yet. So I think if you could write us at PRSS@npr.org, we could get you an answer very quickly.
And one other question I have is, since this is four spigots and a hard drive in one box, and it dies, or when if the hard drive dies, do all the spigots go away? If one of the spigots, hard drive go away, I mean, does if one part of this breaks, do I lose everything?
If the hard drive dies, the audio will not tune to the next segment. It has to do with the logic of the box, and you will have two, so I would assume that one will be your backup.
I'm going to have to buy a backup because I use a lot more spigots than that.
Oh, you do?
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are there any station managers out there who have questions? I talk to a lot of technicians and engineers, and I know there are others on the line who produce as well as manage stations that may not be as informed as a number of the engineers out there.
Well, we're not. If they are, they've kept their mute buttons on.
Where are my old station managers?
Yeah. we were talking earlier about how this teleconference today, this closed circuit, is something that we want to do on a periodic basis. I think this is number two in the series so far, and I don't think we have a fixed schedule for these, but presumably within a matter of every 4 weeks, for 4 months, about every at least on a quarterly basis, we'll be sharing with you, and more often if we feel there's a need for this. And a lot of that's going to depend on the kind of feedback we get from you about how well we're keeping you up to date and informed through all these other mechanisms we have in place, including the newsletter, including our on the website, which we're actively keeping updated with information, and to the extent we have particular information that we need to share with you in some sort of timely way, we always have the ability to send you a directed message of some sort, too. So we hope through all this, and as you begin to absorb more of what the changes will imply at your end, you will keep in touch with us so we can do everything we can, as we would hope to do, to minimize any particular need on your end to do anything special. But there obviously will be some things you need to do on your end, particularly to the extent, as Dick was mentioning earlier, about the antenna system refurbishments that are going on now. Those are literally one-off solutions that need to be actively engaged with the station personnel as well as the people that we would put to work trying to figure out how to take care of any issues you have there. So if you are involved down the road here in some antenna work or some upgrades to your antenna system in some way, those are areas where we definitely are going to need to have very close coordination with you on those aspects of the project, and we'll be getting much more into the details of those in the next couple of months here.
A couple of questions have come in, Pete, that we can address.
Okay.
All participants are muted.
What kind of engineering help might be available for my station? And this is specific to the ground refurbishment project or the ground update. And that will be an individual decision made with the station and in concert with our project managers and engineers once we determine what the state of your equipment is, and we want to make you as healthy so that you can receive Content Depot for many years. And will there be a site visit included? And the answer to that is sometimes. Some stations really do need a site visit. We need to make sure that the arc or the view of the satellites is available to you, and that includes our primary satellite at 99 degrees, Galaxy 16. And we have two backup satellites, so we're looking between 95 degrees and 123 degrees, that kind of clearance for your station. And there's one other question here. When do I get my equipment? As I said, our plan calls for us to begin rolling out receivers about a year from now. It doesn't mean that in the first month you get your equipment. What we're trying to do is spread that delivery of 425 stations over about 6 months so that our help desk, our Tier 2 people, and our depot staff can keep up with your needs and be able to work with your station and give it the attention it needs. So over a six-month period, sometime in there, you will be notified as to when to accept your or when to expect your shipment of receivers. And we're just starting to put that list together now. So any other questions, please send them to us. We'll be happy to try to answer them for you.
All participants are unmuted.
Hey, this is Mike Black. Can I ask a question?
Hey, sure. Mike.
Hey, what? And I'm sorry for joining the call late. And you might have already answered this question. Let me preface it with a comment first. I am a bit concerned about, I mean, we're a station that currently has eight decoders that we use quite heavily, and the failure of four at a time would be pretty devastating to us. So I guess I'm a little concerned about that because we have had hard drive issues with the current storage receiver. So I'm hoping that the next generation will be a little more robust and won't have that issue, have as many issues. The question I do have is, what about the legacy stream decoders? Will those still be able to be used and as backups or as additional ones, or are those things going to be just pretty much taken out of service?
We did answer part of your question before. The SR Pros, or the legacy stream equipment, will remain active for at least 2 years from now. Which means that when we start rolling out receivers a year from now, there would be that six-month period where we try to get them all out to the station and help stations integrate them into their systems. And then a second six-month period where we want to make sure that everyone is moved over to the new equipment. And at the end of that second six-month period, we would probably end broadcast to the legacy equipment. So it's 2 years away. I understand your concern about the hard drive. That was actually raised in Las Vegas at the Public Radio Engineering Conference, and we're working with the vendor on that. The mean time to failure numbers on the newer hard drives are really quite remarkable. They're, as was quoted, they're approaching solid-state devices. So we're trying to get those numbers out, and we'll publish those to you. And we're working with the manufacturer on that question. But because the way the logic works in the receivers and because the receivers are so flexible, a lot of the information is written to the hard drive. And that's the reason why the communications break down if the hard drive fails. So please feel free to write me at prssforward@npr.org. And I'll be sure to get you the latest information when we get it. Does that help, Mike?
Yeah, it does. I just, as I said, I'm going to pass this along to our engineering staff, since I wear three hats here, not as many as my former place. So I wear multiple hats. So.
Yeah, I haven't seen you in a while.
Yeah, I'll be in D.C. in the fall for Eastern Region.
Great, great. See you there.
Yeah.
Well, and just to reinforce the thinking about the new receivers, that they do have twice the number of ports available as the current units. So a failure of the unit itself is an issue, obviously, but for the units when they're up and running, which we expect they will be all the time, you will have actually twice the number of ports in each receiver that you have in the current boxes you have. I have a couple of other questions that have come in, Dick, that you might address, or Anita, or someone. The question is, what are we doing with the information that stations have sent us in the survey? Anita, did you want to maybe talk about that, or Dick, somebody?
Well, actually, I'm going to let Kevin talk about it because he's intimately involved, but I'll take the moment, just this one moment, to introduce myself. I'm Anita Ginyard, and I've been here for a year and a half, so I'm a baby in PRSS land. And my team is comprised of Kevin Thomas and Iris Washington, who you may have heard of from previous project because they were involved in the previous refurbishment effort, and also Mary Birchler. And Kevin is here and can talk a little bit more to the survey because he and Iris were very intimately involved in the information that came in. So, Kevin?
Well, we're playing musical chairs here, so bear
literally,
with us.
Literally, although the music is only something we appreciate here in the studio.
Hi, this is Kevin Thomas, and I wanted to tell you that we have now taken the information received from each of you and compiled it into a number of reports and have come up with some preliminary data, which our goal now is to identify stations that we feel are clearly in very good shape, stations that clearly need our assistance from what we've already seen, and then that big gray area in the center, which is stations that we're going to have to follow up with to get more information. And we'll be following up utilizing phone conference calls, email. We may ask you to go out, take some photos of your equipment for us. And ultimately, if we need to, we will send people out to the stations to go ahead and give us everything that we need to feel 100% confident as to how the equipment stands. And again, our primary goal is to ensure that all of the underperforming equipment is, in fact, upgraded, and that each of the various downlinks, any way possible, have a clear view of not only 99, the primary satellite, but 95 and 127. So at this point, as I say, we are taking the information and dissecting it a little further, looking at a lot of the notes, because everyone who filled out a survey noticed that we had a comment field with every question, and now we're taking beyond the condition, excellent, good, fair, poor, and the performance questions, we're also now dissecting the notes to get the rest of the story.
From the information that you've seen so far, I mean, both you and Iris, Kevin, are veterans of having done prior work, so I think probably the quality of the survey work this time was influenced by knowing better this time than we have before what we really need. But from what you're seeing in the survey responses so far, does it look like you're getting the kind of information that we basically need to sort of do that initial categorization of good, fair, poor, excellent, whatever they are?
Absolutely. The Iris and I were both involved in the Earth Terminal Refurbishment Project, which ran from 2000 through 2005, and during that period collected a considerable amount of data on all of the stations that participated. And that information, in conjunction with what we've received, if we were to look at, for instance, just to take an example, how people rated in the network the reflectors, 82% of the participants rated their reflectors either excellent or in good condition. And typically, as we look at the same thing with mounts, 80% of them, again, rated condition good or excellent. Feeds, a little lower, 78% of them rated excellent or good. And IFLs were a little higher at 85% rated either excellent or good. But again, we're taking every bit of this data and looking beyond the obvious to be 100% sure we know what we're dealing with.
Well, and we can use this as an opportunity to really thank everybody who took the time and put the effort into completing this survey. It was I think we have, 93 or 94% of the stations in the system have responded completely to this so far. So that's a pretty remarkable number, and we really appreciate the fact that this was something that was not probably on your radar screen to do this past spring or late winter, but we've really been able to make some major progress in getting a picture of the state of the downlink system from the work you've done, and that will help influence now how we can get out and start doing the work we need to over the coming months. So we appreciate that.
And we do want to hear from you on all of your concerns. And again, I'll mention the email site is prssforward.npr.org. It's beginning to sound like a fundraiser.
So let's see, we have another question that has come in here, and I'm not sure I understand specific question, but I'll just read it. It says, will the new system require reboots?
I'm not sure of the context, but I can say a few things about that. One of the issues that was important to the engineering group, at least, was deciding what the AES clock rate would be, and I know this is a technical discussion, but it has to do with your interface to the rest of your audio equipment. And we have been assured that this new receiver will be capable of either 44.1 or 48 kilohertz to interface to your automation systems or to your audio distribution systems. And that will require a one-time boot of the receiver. You simply tell it what you want to do and you have to reboot, and then it's permanently fixed. So that's the only thing I can think of. I think there were some issues around stations drifting off frequency. There were a few of those issues where a reboot would work, and we've taken steps to make that improvement as well. Also, the control available on this receiver is much more flexible than the previous receivers. Almost everything is available from the front screen, so you can see any parameter, you can tune to any frequency, and you can make your changes there. Of course, you can still come in through the Ethernet and use the web interface to do it as well.
Okay, we're just a little over a half hour in, and wonder if we have other folks who have been waiting to queue up for some questions or comments. It's awfully quiet out there in Radio Land. Well, in that case, we will, I think, unless the team here has other information to pass along at the moment, we will bid you a good afternoon for now and invite you to keep in touch with us as we go forward, to watch your email, to watch the website, and we will again in another couple of months, if not sooner, we'll be hooking back up with you. And I think I'm getting a signal there may be another Another question coming in. Okay. So the question is, does the PRSS forward involve the ENCO or the automation systems or just these new receivers? This is from Burr Beard in Charlottesville.
We will not be issuing new ENCOs or automation systems this time around.
The assumption is that your current automation system will be interfaceable in a relatively seamless way.
Absolutely.
We're
looking out for the protocols to interface to everything we know that's out there now. Is someone there?
Hearing some rustling.
Cattle rustling.
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello.
What, this is Robin Cross, KCUR, Kansas City. What's the cost of the new receiver or whatever you want to call it?
Well, this is your lucky day, Robin. I know you asked that in Las Vegas, and we do have a price. The new SFX receiver will be $4,813.
My GM will have a cow.
Well, remember, you're getting four audio ports.
I know.
Okay. You can send us the cow then, I guess.
Okay. Remember, they go up steps, but they don't go down.
Now there's an image. Another question just arrived from Lou Downey out in Utah. Let's see. How many of the new DMODs will we be receiving? He joined in the session late.
We will be issuing each station two receivers, and again, each receiver has four audio spigots and one hard drive. And if you want more, the price is $4,813 a piece through PRSS. Does that answer your question, Lewis?
You bet. Thanks.
Okay.
And yet another question. Or two here. Are the new streaming decoder receivers fed the same digital format as the current streaming decoder receivers?
Yes. We have a lot to consider to think about even changing that that codec right now. It's we're not ruling it out, but we're not going to attempt to do that until we get through all of the transition periods for a lot of good reasons. One of them being that the SR Pros are pretty much set to receive L2 audio, and so we're rolling out with that way, including the forward error correction we're using now. Sometime near the end of the 2 years, 1.5 to 2 year out schedule, we will be working with NPR Labs to do some subjective testing, listening tests, and determine if we will move to a different codec and maybe even a different rate. But we need to have those tests behind us and under our belt to make sure that any interface to HD radios and any reduction in bandwidth for audio that's utilized by those radios is going to work well.
And the nice part about the new receivers is they are upgradable without having to replace the box itself. So we have a lot of flexibility in the new receiver we don't have in the current generation.
That's right. And it does come with a variety of choices. But as I said, we have to stay with L2 for the foreseeable future. And then we have the choice to change it to almost anything we want, and we can do that remotely through the backbone.
There's another question that's here. I think you addressed this earlier, but it just came in. Are the outputs true AES stereo standard?
Absolutely. We insisted that we understood the problem with the earlier receivers and made that comment to IDC a long time ago. One of our engineers here, Doug Bevington, did extensive work on the AES standard and did a great deal of testing and also suggested some circuit board modifications to IDC that they're incorporating in their board. And they have gone back and rebuilt a board for us with an improved AES circuitry that will meet the specification as written. So we've insisted on that, and we won't accept the receiver unless it is.
And finally, in this question, are new storage receivers being provided at this time? And I take it that means, is there a separate storage receiver? Because it seems as though we've been talking mostly about streaming.
No, it is not separated from the four audio ports. The receiver, each receiver has four audio outputs that are completely independent, and one hard drive that can pull down your files. And we're looking at this design in a lot of ways because there's a lot of creative thought behind how we can utilize these to provide more features to stagers.
Each receiver also has two RF front ends in it as well, so it's actually able to monitor two different satellite carriers simultaneously.
Yeah, either different satellites if we wanted to aim two dishes or different transponders on the same satellite. Yeah. And because we broadcast two different carriers, one for streaming audio and one for files, we needed this feature for both the streaming decoders to work and the file delivery system to work.
Okay, and we still have some additional questions coming in. This one's from Mark Garrett, and Mark has a couple here. Let me start with, will there be different connectors on the back of the new receivers requiring a changeover?
We have insisted on maintaining the DB9 connections as specified, as you know them now, including the AES connections. So if you're using the DB9 connectors, it should be a simple swap.
Okay, and this relates to contact closures. The question is, will they be the same in the new receivers as in the current batch?
They may not be commanded in the same way, but yes, they will be set up as understood by stations today.
And finally, from Mark, what is needed if we need to change birds due to a failure of Galaxy 16?
We actually do have a backup plan, and Pete and the rest of us have been looking at it more closely over the last month or so. We plan on publishing that plan because there have been a few changes in space that are beyond our control. But we are in no immediate danger. In fact, we still have two options for backup satellites. And the plan was published some time ago, and we're trying to get clarification out of Intelsat, but if we were to have a satellite failure, we would be immediately talking to you about where to repoint your dishes.
And the two locations are 127.
127 degrees and 95 degrees.
And 95. But I don't know if there's a, which one, I think 127 is the first, is our first preference, I believe.
Yeah, and as you know, Pete, the way the contract is written, there are some extenuating circumstances. We're not the only ones who look for backup.
Right.
We are guaranteed backup, but we are not necessarily guaranteed one satellite over another. It'll be one of those two, depending on the circumstances.
And so this reinforces the need for us to be making sure that the ground system is serviceable and working properly. The work that Kevin and Iris and Anita were talking about, making sure not only the dish is working properly, but that the dish system, the receiving system, is able to be maneuvered and manipulated over to look at these other locations. And that's an important part of the overall long-term health and business recovery strategy that we've had for years.
And if I could add in, many of these downlinks were in fact benchmarked for 95 and 127 during your terminal refurbishment project, and much of that information is electronically on file here.
And by benchmarking, I think that actually involves putting physical marks on the dish to say when it's on 127 degrees, looking at that satellite, here's where the dish needs to be aligned.
Exactly.
And the same thing
right.
would be true for 95.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, we continue to get some questions. This is from Nathan Chervik up in New Hampshire. And Nathan is asking, will the new boxes continue to use mini XLR? Will there be connectors available in addition to the DB9s that we now know and love?
We haven't finalized the hardware yet, but I do not think that mini XLRs will be included. It'll be DB9s. For a lot of reasons. we're looking at, Nathan, I know you're an IT guy, so we're looking at a lot of uses for the Ethernet ports, not only to move data and other information, but basically anything that's binary, we can push through there. So if you write me here, I will be happy to keep you up to date on where we are with those decisions. And congratulations on your new job. I understand you left Minnesota Public Radio a little while ago.
Okay, so that seems to be the current batch of questions, and obviously if you, I guess it looks as though we're monitoring the press forward at npr.org site at the moment, so if you have something you want to send to us to that site, if we're still up and running here, we'll be happy to respond, but otherwise prss forward at npr.org is a place you can always send your email questions to. And we will answer them offline, if not online. We do have, let's see. Is there somebody online?
One last-minute question.
Yeah.
The AES sample rates, are they a manual toggle, 44.1 or 48, or how is that handled?
We haven't gotten that deviation yet, but it will be handled in software. You'll make a choice and reboot your receiver, and it will lock to the clock you've chosen.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm being told that there are a number of folks, some folks anyway, who have not been able to connect in for one reason or another, who would be interested to know if this will be archived and available for delayed listening. And I believe the answer is yes. Yes, I'm getting a nod. So if you have been trying unsuccessfully to get connected to us here, or if you've had a problem getting in late, we will have this available for you on our prss.org or the Press Forward website, so you'll be able to monitor this in your at your leisure. And we have another question that's come in through our site from Mike Black, who was on with us a few minutes ago. And this is relating, Dick, to sampling rate, and he's wondering if the stored files will still be stored at the 44.1 kilohertz rate that we use today.
Yes, for the foreseeable future. Down the road, we may look at entertaining both 44.1 and 48, but for the time being, we're not really trying to change much and get those receivers out there, get everyone up and running, and then we can have a discussion about things like that. But the file system will not change. That's one of the reasons we can't make quick changes with the codec, is because the file system is so dependent on the L2 format.
And let's see, we have, I heard a voice clearing a throat out there. Is there a question?
Yes, this is Alexei Kamalagamkon from KCK. We currently have SR2000 Pro for our receiver. We have only one receiver and a backup. And now my question is, does the SR2000 handle a stream and receiving files for a backup?
If I understand your question, the SR2000 Pro is only an audio decoder. Yeah, it's just an audio decoder. It will stream out of two ports. The SFX is the file receiver, and that's designed specifically to spool these files to a hard drive where your automation system can pull them off and store them for your scheduling.
That's the current complement.
That's the current complement.
Current receivers that are out in the field, but the new receivers we're talking about have both the streaming function as well as the ability to store and play out files in the same box.
Right. Yeah, that's called an SFX Pro. So we don't misunderstand what receivers we're talking about. The SR Pro was the audio decoder that we issued starting in the early 2000. And the SFX Pro is the combined audio decoder and file storage receiver.
And that's the new one that we're talking about in this this next round of equipment deployment.
Right. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Okay,
sure. Another question that has come into our website. I remember from when the current system rolled out that there was an uproar about manual tuning. I've never seen the need for it, but is there an option to manually tune the new receivers?
That is a topic that we need to discuss further with stations and producers. Producers have one view and stations have another view, and as you might assume, we're sort of the pickle in the middle here. So we're trying to do the right thing, but there is no hard decision there yet.
Kevin has joined us again. Do you have a
question? I just wanted to mention to the stations, going back to our evaluation of the surveys, that this is really an in-depth evaluation we're going through. And please, by all means, expect that you may get a call from us asking for clarification. Several questions that we've looked at were clearly yes and no type questions, and then there was a whole lot more that needed to be put in that we need. So if you get calls from us, please take our calls and help us with our questions.
I don't know that we mentioned it earlier, but is there a time window within which we believe the actual station antenna field work would begin? Is that imminent, or is that still some number of months away? How does that stack up, or do we know yet? I guess it's going to depend a bit on what we find from the final analysis of the surveys. But can you talk maybe a little bit about what stations might anticipate in terms of the timing of the antenna system components of all this?
It looks to us like we would actually put people in the field sometime near the end of this calendar year, possibly in the middle of the fourth quarter, and stations would start seeing some people for site surveys, and shortly after that some stations would see contractors for installations and repairs. So we would publicize those schedules, and of course stations would be well aware of our plans, and we will work in tandem with stations and contractors to make sure that everyone is happy with the decisions made.
Okay, other questions? Very good. Well, this has been great. We appreciate all of you who have joined in, and we continue to look forward to answering further questions as we go forward, or if you have things you need to know from us in general about any other parts of our PRSS work, please don't be shy. The Press Forward project that we've been talking about today, we do have a special place that you can email directly to for answer to questions about that if you choose. That's the PRSSforward@npr.org. And, of course, our general help at PRSS.org is also available to you as well. So we thank you for your participation today and look forward to talking to you again soon. Thanks.